We should have known the end was near. How could we not have known? When the sky began to pour acid and rivers began to turn green, we should have known our land would soon be dead. Then again, how could we have known when they didn't want us to know? When we began to wobble and stagger, tumbling and snapping like feeble little branches, they told us it would soon be over, that we would all be well in no time. They asked us to come to village meetings to talk about it. They told us we had to trust them. We should have spat in their faces, heaped upon them names most befitting. Liars, savages, unscrupulous, evil. We should have cursed their mothers and their grandmothers, flung pejoratives upon their fathers, prayed for unspeakable calamities to befall their children. We hated them, and we hated their meetings, but we attended all of them. Every 8 weeks, we went to the village square to listen to them. We were dying. We were helpless. We were afraid. Those meetings were our only chance at salvation. We ran home from school on the appointed days, eager to complete our chores so we would miss not one word at the assembly. We fetched water from the well, chased goats and chickens around our compounds into bamboo barns, swept away leaves and twigs scattered across our front yards. We washed iron pots and piles of bowls after dinner, left our huts many minutes before the time the meeting was called for. We wanted to get there before they strode into the square in their fine suits and polished shoes. Our mothers hurried to the square too, as did our fathers. They left their work unfinished in the forest beyond the big river, their palms and bare feet dusted with poisoned earth. "The work will be there waiting for us tomorrow," our fathers said to us, "but we'll only have so many opportunities to hear what the men from Pexton have to say." Even when their bodies bore little strength, after hours of toiling beneath a sun both benevolent and cruel, they went to the meetings, because we all had to be at the meetings. The only person who did not attend the meetings was Konga, our village madman. Konga, who had no awareness of our suffering and lived without fears of what was and what was to come. He slept in the school compound as we hurried along, snoring and slobbering if he wasn't tossing, itching, muttering, eyes closed. Trapped as he was, alone in a world in which spirits ruled and men were powerless under their dominion, he knew nothing about Pexton. In the square, we sat in near silence as the sun left us for the day, oblivious to how the beauty of its descent heightened our anguish. We watched as the Pexton men placed their briefcases on the table our village head, Wojabeki, had set for them. There were always three of them. We called them the round one. His face was as round as a ball we would have had fun kicking. The sick one. His suits were oversized, giving him the look of a man dying of a flesh-stealing disease. And the leader. He did the talking. The other two did the nodding. We mumbled among ourselves as they opened their briefcases and passed sheets of paper among themselves, covering their mouths as they whispered into each other's ears to ensure they had their lies straight. We had nowhere more important to be, so we waited, desperate for good news. We whispered at intervals, wondering what they were thinking whenever they paused to look at us, at our grandfathers and fathers on stools up front, those with dead or dying children in the first row, our grandmothers and mothers behind them, nursing babies into quietude and shooting us glares if we made a wrong sound from under the mango tree. Our young women repeatedly sighed and shook their heads. Our young men, clustered at the back, stood clenched-jawed and seething. We inhaled, waited, exhaled. We remembered those who had died from diseases with neither names nor cures. Our siblings and cousins and friends who had perished from the poison in the water and the poison in the air and the poisoned food growing from the land that lost its purity the day Pexton came drilling. We hoped the men would look into our eyes and feel something for us. We were children, like their children, and we wanted them to recognize that. If they did, it wasn't apparent in their countenance. They'd come for Paxton, to keep its conscience clean. They hadn't come for us.